You are listening to
Rural Voices,
the Rural Youth Europe podcast.
We are back with series two of Rural Voices. We have a brand new sound, new guests, and a whole host of different topics and events to be covering this year. I'm Dan, a young farmer from Devon in England, and in today's episode, we are breaking down the topic of Brexit and how it is affecting some of the members within our network. First up, I spoke to Jemima Brown. She is a member of NFYFC in England, but is now a resident in France and talks about how Brexit impacted her family's move across the Channel.
My parents have always wanted to live in France. It's something they've always wanted to do. But with Brexit, it really accelerated it. So we moved in December so we could be here just before we left the EU.
I then spoke to Alex Little. He is a member of the Young Farmers Clubs of Ulster in Northern Ireland. He is a vegetable farmer and spoke about the impact of Brexit on his family's farming business.
All our leek plants come from Holland. And a lot of the seed would come through seed houses in Holland, mostly grown in New Zealand. That was a bit of a worry. But like at the end of the day, we knew that it couldn't just be like a light switch turning off.
And finally, I am joined by Martin, the Group 2 representative on the board of Rural Youth Europe, to play our first ever round of Campfire Stories, Two Truths and One Lie. We have stories from three past participants of Rural Youth Europe, Edward from Norway, Lasma from Latvia and Russ from England. Here's a little snippet of what Russ had to say.
It's with some hesitation I tell this story, but it has been locked up as a secret for too long, and I've carried the guilt for many years.
Make sure you listen until the end to hear that one. But first up, in today's episode, here is what happened when I caught up with Jemima Brown. Hi, Jemima. It's so great to have you on the podcast. The first time we met was at the study session in Strasbourg last year. I was recording the first ever episode of Rural Voices, so it's nice to have you on over a year later for the first episode of series two.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah, no, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much.
Let's start then by introducing yourself and saying a bit about your background growing up in the UK.
Sure. So my name's Jemima. I'm 19 and I am from deep in the heart of Derbyshire. Both my parents grew up farming and I personally haven't grown up farming as such, but I've always had something to do with it. There's always been cows as a part of my life. Yeah, I've loved it. You know, I've gone to school in the UK all the way up to sixth form, still at university in the UK.
And also a very proud young farmer in England.
Yes, I am still a member of Young Farmers in the UK. I am part of UToxeter JNFU. It's great, great people. So nice to still be connected to my UK life.
And what are you studying? I believe you're still studying in the UK at university.
Yes, I am studying at the University of Nottingham and I am studying Integrated Agricultural Business Management with an international placement award.
So you've grown up around farming, you're a young farmer in England, and now you're studying agribusiness. You clearly know a thing or two about the agricultural industry. Brexit, when this first was on the cards, what were your initial thoughts?
Well, I wasn't really very old when people first started yeah. talking about Brexit, because it was, what, 4 or 5 years ago now? So I didn't really understand much of it or the impact that the European Union had on British farmers or just farming in general. But, you know, growing up and learning a bit more about it and things like that, I think that it does impact farming massively. And there's a lot that the European Union does for farmers and farming. Nothing's perfect. No political system will ever be perfect. But I think that the opportunities that it did give farmers was really quite amazing.
And the big plot twist in your story is that when the country voted in the EU referendum, your family were living in the UK, but now that we are officially out of the EU, You are in fact in France, and on this call now you are calling from deepest, darkest France on a farm with your family. What was the driving factor behind moving to France from the UK?
Well, my parents have always wanted to live in France. It's something they've always wanted to do. But I don't know, maybe it wasn't the right time when they first thought about doing it. And then my sisters and I were in school, and again, probably wasn't the right time. But with Brexit, it really accelerated it. So we moved in December so we could be here just before we left the EU. As of the 31st of December, if you weren't in France then, it was so much harder to apply for residency and everything like that. And we didn't even have the house yet. So everything was still being signed for, everything was going through. We just had to find somewhere that we were able to stay until everything had been signed. But we're here now, we're in the house, and it's great, and everything is just incredible.
And how does it compare living in the countryside in France compared to living in Derbyshire in England?
Well, here, the region that we're in the mountains. So it's amazing. Like, you wake up in the morning, you look out the window, and you can just see the mountaintops. So we're much higher than back in the UK. We only have one neighbour as well. So we're really isolated and really sort of cut off from everything else. It's a bit different from home in the respect there's not a lot going on around here. And in France, everything's so far away from each other. But generally, it's not really that different.
Yeah, and obviously you still have your UK life. You study in England, you're still a member of NFYFC. How do you find juggling the two?
I don't know, it's strange. I mean, I think it's strange for everyone at the moment because with COVID and everything, no one can really see each other anyway. And it feels like being at home, but also worlds away at the same time. Because some of my friends I live really close to, so I can just hop in my car and 5 minutes down the road, I'm there. Whereas here, it's like 16 hours and then I'll be at home.
Yeah, but I mean, as you say, once things start opening up again post-COVID, you'll be back in the UK studying and experiencing the best of both worlds. Has your opinion on Brexit changed now that you're living in France? What are the French saying about Brexit?
I get asked by so many people from mainland Europe that are in the EU, why are you leaving the EU? Why do you want to? What's going on? What does it mean? In France, they're very for the European Union. The European Union does a lot for France, whether it's in farming, with food, politically, you know, just day-to-day things that the EU really, really helps France with. But then equally, it hasn't affected France. It hasn't really affected the EU with the UK leaving. If anything, it's just affected the UK. It has created border issues, so it's much harder to get between the UK and France now, with COVID being used as the excuse, which you can see for some reasons why it would be an issue with COVID and everything, but Brexit is the main reason. The UK seems to be trying to show that it's tough, that it's got everything together, when being in France, it really seems like England's sort of drowning in whatever it's trying to achieve.
And what makes you think that? Why does it seem that that's the French perception on Brexit?
I think the way that French media portrays the UK has a big impact on what the French think about the UK and the EU and everything. But looking at the UK not being there anymore, you are thinking to yourself, why have you done that? But that doesn't make sense because that works really well here.
And as you say, for you personally, it is really affecting you because you're wanting to be travelling to the UK for university. So regardless of what's happening politically or economically, it's simply going to affect you quite a bit.
It is, yeah. So I'm at uni. My younger sister starts uni in September and my older sister is going back to university, all of which is going to be in the UK. But we're now French residents. So, you know, getting student accommodation in the UK, but we're still UK citizens. So it's all a bit of a mess and it's quite complicated. But I think we're getting there. I think once COVID begins to slow down, it'll really show the effects of Brexit, but I am hoping that it will make things a bit smoother.
Earlier, you mentioned that France is very for the EU, generally. I'd be interested to hear whether you're hearing much of the other side. Is there a growing backlash towards the EU in France? Because we certainly hear in the UK media that other countries may be looking to go the same way.
I'm really not sure, because there's always going to be two sides of the story. There's always going to be positives and negatives to both sides. There's been lots of talks at the moment. I've heard quite a bit, sort of whispers, I guess you'd say, of how France wanting to maybe leave the EU. That's been in talks. There are sometimes some towns that you drive through and they've got Frexit graffitied onto walls and things like that. But you're not really sure. It depends on the person, you know, what they think, how it's impacted them. But I can see both sides. But generally, I do think that the EU, what it creates as the bigger picture, is very positive.
And the interesting thing is this is directly affecting you, but you weren't old enough to vote in that initial referendum. But if the French ever had their own referendum, as a French resident, you would be able to have your say.
Definitely, yeah. Although it does seem like, especially with things like agriculture, France is very much the backbone of the EU. So should France leave, it almost feels like the EU would break up. You know, it'd be something that can't really function much anymore, because France is a massive overproducer as well. It produces so much food and it's got a really massive thing. So if you go to the shop, nearly everything you buy in the French supermarket will be produced in France. They export so much more than they import, and pretty much only to EU countries as well. So France has a massive part to play in the EU. So if it does come to that, I'll definitely be voting to stay.
Yeah, and if they do leave, you'll just hop over to Spain.
Yeah, or Germany maybe.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Jemima, for this catch up. It's been so interesting hearing your story, and I wish you all the best and look forward to seeing you at a Rural Youth Europe event soon.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure to be a part of this.
You are listening to
Rural Voices,
the Rural Youth Europe podcast.
Thank you, Jemima. That was so interesting to not only hear Jemima's story of her family moving over to France just before the Brexit deadline and how Jemima plans to juggle life in the UK and in France, but the different perceptions towards Brexit from each side of the English Channel and the role that the media plays in those perceptions. For farmers, Brexit has been incredibly contentious, and there has been an awful lot of debate within the farming community about whether it will be good or bad for the industry. Next up, I'm going to be talking to Alex Little. He is a vegetable farmer from Northern Ireland, so this was a great opportunity to talk to Alex about whether Brexit is having an impact on his farming business. Here's what happened when I caught up with Alex.
You are listening to
Rural Voices,
the Rural Youth Europe podcast.
So Alex, you're a vegetable farmer from Northern Ireland. I appreciate it's a really busy time for you at the moment. So thank you for giving up your time to come and chat on the podcast.
No problem, Dan. Nice to meet you, and great to be involved in the podcast.
So tell us about your farm at home then. Is it a family farm?
Yeah, so my dad started the farm roughly, I suppose, about 30 years ago now. He's a first-generation farmer, my granddad. He was a furniture salesman and had no interest in farming or whatever. But my dad, after school, during school on summer holidays and stuff, was working to a local mixed farm. He had cows, sheep, pigs, and they had cereals and they had potatoes as well, and he just caught the bug then. And I suppose that the draw was more towards the arable crops like the cereals and potatoes. At that stage we only owned, my granny, she only owned like half an acre in front of the house, so he had to choose a high value crop that was gonna, you know, you're gonna be able to make a reasonable return from with half an acre. So that was where he started, and spring onions was the lead crop, you know, which I suppose some people will know that it's quite cheap to grow, but the main cost that comes in harvesting, preparing it, and that was something he had plenty of time, but just not much land, so that suited him perfectly. So it went from that, and I suppose for the first 10 years, it was just increasing probably by, you know, so it went from half an acre to 1 acre, and then from 1 acre to 2 acres, and 2 acres to four, and like increasing, sort of doubling up every year. And like 10 years into it, like it was starting to get into a reasonable scale. That coincided with the supermarkets coming to Northern Ireland. That was the introduction of Tesco into Northern Ireland in 1999. And that was sort of the start of where we are now, I suppose you could say. That was a big jump from, you know, being a market gardener basically to a fully fledged vegetable farmer with pack house and you know, all the trimmings that go with it. So we've got constant work all year round for our staff, for our investment in machinery and tractors and the pack house and all that. You know, it's busy all year round. So it's good in the fact that yes, with steady income, but with also very little time, you know, rest time, that it's quite constant. You know, there's only 3 days of the year that we have no orders to go out. But no, it's exciting, and you know, I've always been involved from an early age, but never been forced into it, which was quite nice. And I think through that, I've, you know, been able to make my own pathway into it.
And that really is quite the story, from half an acre outside your granny's house to the setup you've got now, just 30 years on. So we're here to talk about the B word, Brexit. As a vegetable farmer, I assume you must be pretty reliant on exports and imports. Was there anything that you were particularly worried about leading up to Brexit?
Yeah, I suppose the scaremongering was all about, you know, the anti-Brexit side of things was all, they were all saying, oh, you know, you're not going to be able to get your plants in. Like all our leek plants come from Holland. And a lot of the seed would come through seed houses in Holland, mostly grown in New Zealand, but would be brought, like treated and, you know, created and all the rest of it in Holland and sold by a Dutch company. That was a bit of a worry. And then, yeah, a lot of our help is, of those 35 that we would have at this time of the year, there's really only about 15 of those are local. And, you know, we maybe have about 20 Bulgarians and Romanians. So that was always a scare. But, like, at the end of the day, we knew that it couldn't just be, like, a light switch turning off. The primary industry in the UK would just have, like, closed down overnight if that was the case. You know, in the back of your head, you knew maybe there's going to be some sort of restrictions or like visas or, you know, work permits like it used to be and things like that. But you sort of knew that there's going to need to be a way around it. So it didn't really worry us overly. And then because obviously we're in Northern Ireland and the south of Ireland is going to remain in EU, there was sort of the talk about a border between the north and south of Ireland, which I suppose could create tensions and things like that as well. Like, it was all sort of scaremonger and nobody knew what was going to happen. And I think sort of the UK became the laughingstock of the rest of Europe, you know.
You mentioned that a lot of your seed supply was from Holland. Has that been affected then since officially leaving the EU?
Well, we started planting about 4 weeks ago now. And the first delivery came in just as planned, probably a little bit more paperwork than normal. The seed, I'm hearing from other farmers that maybe weren't just as well organised, that they're struggling to get seed in on time. But we generally order our seed in either December or January. So we try to get in before the rush and, you know, make sure we get what we want. So seed wise, we've been okay as well so far. But it's just been, you know, you have to be on the ball and like thinking about it and, you know, just give it a bit of acknowledgement and not just leave everything on it like you used to, you know.
What about the impact of supply to Northern Irish supermarkets? You know, were the shelves empty, like was warned. What has been the impact there?
As I was saying there, what we were worried about before the whole Brexit thing, that the border would be between the north and south of Ireland. It seems to be more between Northern Ireland and the mainland UK. So that has been a bit of an issue. So things that are coming from, you know, like English suppliers over to, you know, the Northern Irish depot and Tesco, or the Belfast depot and Tesco, like that has been, there's been holdups there. And we actually find that more difficult, getting stuff from England to Northern Ireland as we do from the rest of Europe into Northern Ireland, which I suppose will possibly open up some opportunities for us going forward. I know Sainsbury's, they were badly hit because Sainsbury's had very little local suppliers. In Northern Ireland, it was all sort of done through UK suppliers. So what they did was teamed up with the Henderson Group, which is a local wholesaler, and they were able to, they basically stocked Henderson own brand products in Sainsbury stores. That was, it was like, it was on the headlines and stuff over here, like, you know, it was like as if there'd basically been like a takeover of the fruit and veg aisles from Henderson's group and the Sainsbury's. But that's something where I see a bit of an opportunity, because we supply both Sainsbury's and Henderson's, so we'll hopefully be able to, you know, ride that storm a wee bit too, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, hopefully one positive for UK farmers coming out of Brexit is maybe a greater focus for supermarkets to sell more locally sourced produce and not relying on imports as much. So to wrap up, looking to the future, are you overall feeling optimistic and positive about the future of farming in Northern Ireland?
Yeah, definitely. I think from a vegetable point of view, from a vegetable growing point of view, I think there's massive opportunities in the coming years. From a Brexit point of view too, I think definitely the buyers in the supermarkets and the customers on the ground, like, it's focused their eye on local produce and local supply. So I think, yeah, there's definitely opportunities in the future for us. But again, it's just one of these things. You need to be not stuck in your ways and be ready to jump at every opportunity that comes your way, and yeah, jump on it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a great note to finish there. Thank you so much, Alex, for giving us your thoughts. It'll be interesting to see how it all pans out. And I wish you all the best with the farm in the years to come.
No problem. Thank you very much. Great to be a part of your podcast.
You are listening to
Rural Voices,
the Rural Youth Europe podcast.
Okay, so we are now joined by the Group 2 representative on the board of Rural Youth Europe. Martin, welcome to the podcast.
Hi. Hello, Dan.
This isn't your first time on the podcast, though, is it?
No, it's not. I think I was already on the first episode.
Yes, you were, for the original listeners, you were on the very first episode of Rural Voices when we recorded in Strasbourg at the study session last year.
Yeah, right. It was a great experience.
So, Martin, you are here with a job to do. You are here to play the first ever round of Campfire Stories, Two Truths and One Lie. Can you hear the nice campfire sound effects to make it feel like we're there at an event?
And actually, I don't hear them.
No, you won't hear it, because I will put it in the post-production. So just pretend it's there. Martin, can you hear the nice campfire sound effects for atmosphere?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I can really feel the heat.
Okay, good. Good acting there, Martin. Okay, so this game was inspired by some of the catch-ups that we have been having over Zoom through the Friends of Rural Youth Europe Facebook page. And we all know that one of the best things about Rural Youth Europe is the people that you meet and the stories you hear. So you all seem to have something in common, and yet the people you meet are so diverse and have so many different stories to tell. So I have asked three past Rural Youth Europe participants to send me a story in a voice note. This could be a story from their home organisation or from a Rural Youth Europe event. But crucially, Martin, one of these is a big fat lie. One of the stories you're about to hear is totally made up, and it's down to you to work out which one is the lie.
I understand what I have to do, but I'm afraid I'm not good at guessing.
Okay, so let's pretend that we are all round the campfire. We've had a busy day learning about Brexit. And first up, we have a story from Edvard from Norway.
Hello, Europe. This is Norway calling. My name is Edvard Saterbø from Norges Bygdomslag, and this is my story. The year is 2017 and the last night of the autumn seminar in Austria. And as most last nights at Rural Youth Europe events, there was a lot of hugging and tearful farewells. In the midst of all of this, at about 3 a.m., me and my travel companion realize we have not ordered plane tickets back to Norway. This ends up costing us about 1,000 euros for last-minute plane tickets leaving from Munich in Germany, more than 400 kilometers from where we are at the time. Luckily, with cooperation with Rural Youth Europe, we were able to hitch a ride to Salzburg and then jump on a train to Germany, arriving home in Norway only one day later than first planned.
So Edvard's 3 a.m. realization that he didn't have a flight home. Thoughts, please.
It seems very fitting for this game, but I'm also not very sure. Of course, the autumn seminar happened, and I'm sure Edvard was there, and all about the last nights at those events he mentioned is of course true, but I'm not sure what our office would have done in that case. And of course, they always collect the tickets before the people leave and on the first day. So I'm not sure.
All right, then. So let's go on to our second story. And this one's from Lasma from Latvia.
Hello, Europe. This is Latvia calling. My name is Lasma Lapinja from Latvian Young Farmers Club. And this is my story. Once upon a time, a few Latvian young farmers went to Hanover, Germany to attend exhibition Agritechnica. After a few wonderful days in Germany and a few wonderful glasses of beer, we went back home to Latvia. Driving our cars on Germany border with Poland, miracle happened. One of cars got on fire. It took more than an hour to get rid of it. Few a bit burned arms and six fire extinguishers. Car and people in it drove back home on car evacuator. From that time, we have saying, Mercedes sparks like a Christmas tree.
A Mercedes sparks like a Christmas tree. What are your thoughts on that, Martin?
Mercedes is not my favorite car brand, so that's fine. Okay. Even if it's German.
Is that something that you think could happen on the way back from Germany, though?
Yeah, so there are a lot of details that would fit, and I know this exhibition, it's quite nice, and my home organization always has a stand there.
Okay, so this could be believable. Also, Martin, are you appreciating that this is Latvia calling?
Yeah, of course. I love this Eurovision-like starts.
I knew you would appreciate this, Mr. Eurovision himself, Martin.
Yeah, I'm already getting excited. Eurovision is close.
Okay, before we get on to some extreme Eurovision chat, let's hear our third story from Russ from England.
Hello, Rural Youth Europe. This is Russ Carrington speaking, former chairman of Rural Youth Europe from England, and this is my story. It's with some hesitation I tell this story, but it has been locked up as a secret for too long, and I've carried the guilt for many years. So during the rally in Austria in 2015, which was a very good rally, I helped to coordinate a short film which was showing all the different countries and their flags on a big plan. Which we were filming off a balcony. And I had all of the countries entering with their flags and to a kind of big map on the floor. But I realized I left one of the countries out, and the film we made never actually made it into the public arena. the country that I left out was my own country, England, and NFYFC in the film. So I'm very sorry about that, but that's what happened.
So that was Russ with his heartfelt confession to forgetting to put England and NFYFC in his video at the 2015 rally in Austria.
Yeah. But yeah, sometimes you look the last at yourself. So, but I'm wondering if I can find this material anywhere else in our Dropbox folders we have access from the board. So.
You do not have time now, Martin, to check the Dropbox folders to make up your decision.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so which one do you think is the lie?
Yeah, actually, I think that Russ' story and also the burning car seem like the most normal stories for me. I think, not booking your plane ticket until you want to go to the plane is quite insane. And I'm very sure that our office would have noticed that before.
Okay, so you are saying that you think the lie is Edward forgetting to book his flight home.
Yeah.
Okay, so I can now reveal that the lie is in fact the suspense.
Ooh.
The lie is Russ forgetting to put NFYFC on his map.
Oh, okay.
So that story about forgetting the flight and realizing at 3 a.m. is completely true.
Yeah, I'm very surprised. And actually, I'm even more surprised I've never heard of this before.
And also, I love how many times you said, I don't think the office would have allowed that.
Yeah.
And I was sat here thinking, oh, I don't know if this is going to look good on the office.
Yeah, maybe we should have a talk with them.
Maybe we should have a sit down, yeah. Okay, so Martin, a couple things before we finish the episode. What is coming up around the corner with Rural Youth Europe?
Yeah, I think the next thing coming up is the final voting on our Rural Youth Europe Project of the Year, or the Rural Youth Europe Awards. We got a lot of great candidates there and some great projects, so I'm very excited which one will win the competition here.
Okay, so basically our very own Eurovision.
Yeah.
Right, so let's wrap up the episode there. We will be back next month with episode 2 of the new series. In the meantime, make sure you get involved on all the Rural Youth Europe socials. If you have your very own campfire story you want to tell, then get in touch on our socials. If you have a story that you want to tell, we want to help tell it. This is your podcast, so we would love to hear some feedback. Martin, do you have any final words?
Actually, no, but of course, you always can have a look at the Facebook group and be ready. I will also put up another event there in a few days as well, because I'm preparing something.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll keep our eyes peeled for that one. Thank you, Martin.
Yeah, thank you too, Dan.
You are listening to Rural Voices, the Rural Youth Europe podcast.